Golf Smarter, number 631. Dave Pelz on Guilt-Free Golf, the benefits and joy of having a practice area in your yard.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Dave.
Hello, Fred. I haven't seen you for a while, but it's good to be with you.
It's great to be with you. It's been a year since the last time you were on the show, and you had a tremendous impact on me. But because I just loved the conversation we had, because we really didn't talk about golf as much as we talked about you and your history and how you got to where you are today, which I found absolutely fascinating because we don't get that a lot from you. But it was a real joy to talk about it. But that's not where I'm going today.
Okay.
I want to start. We're going to talk about putting today, and we're going to talk about practice and tips, but I'm really excited to let you know that just yesterday, the folks from Sinlawn completed my backyard putting green, and I did it because I saw the video of your backyard and heard your involvement there and had to go in that direction.
Well, first off, let me congratulate you. It's my dream to have a Sinlawn complex in my backyard, and I do wish so many other golfers could have it. I'm glad you're going to be one of the fortunate ones. My son Eddie has been devoting, well, most of his time actually, running a company that actually installs the greens for the Sinlawn Golf division. And he's doing it in Austin and San Antonio and Dallas and Houston and in the greater Texas areas. He's been installing these. He manages the company that installs them. And there are some golfers that are taking the opportunity and are blessed with the chance of actually having this happen. But it's one of the greatest things I've personally ever done in my life for my golf career.
And what is it that you did with Sinlawn to make the product far superior to everything else that I researched?
Well, first off, I did some background research, and I actually worked with, I think it was three different, what I would now call retail or installer companies, that they could, in fact, deliver and install the materials and the green in a player's backyard, and I tested them. And they didn't test very well. I mean, it was fun, and you could hit golf shots to these greens, but the balls would bounce unrealistically. If they had a cement pad under them, the balls were just totally unrealistic. You could putt on them. You couldn't chip or pitch to them. And you certainly couldn't hit full shots in. Then I started looking at the grass itself, and I found the best one I could find, which was, I look back at it now, I say it was none too good. And I made a trip to Dalton, Georgia, went in and got an appointment with the CEO of the company. And this company is now Sinlawn. At the time, they hadn't formed the Sinlawn division of their larger carpet. They make a lot of carpets. They make indoor-outdoor carpets. They're in Dalton, Georgia. They're a very large company, and they have a research division, which is the real reason not only their products were good, but, I mean, were the best at the time, even though they were, I say now, none too good. But I got into their research division, and I said, what would it take to change the characteristics of your outdoor carpet that you now make to something that would be really, really good for golf? And he said, oh, we sell these for golf. You know, this is the way we make them, and this is what happens, and this we sell them to golfers, and they're fun. They're nice. I said, yeah, but listen, I'm a real golfer. I work with tour professionals. I want to hit a shot to one of these greens that behaves like a real golf ball does on a real golf course, so that if I practice and I chip and I putt in my backyard, I'm getting a behavior of a real golf ball on a real green. And he said, well, that's a horse of a different color. He said, wait a minute. So we started talking. And I would say that it was a 6-month period in time where the research division of Sinlon and Dave Pels and Eddie Pels came to an agreement that, hey, let's not do an endorsement agreement because I don't like the product now. But if we form a joint venture partnership, we will endeavor to give you the information that will allow you to make the carpet that allows the golfer to really truly benefit in the knowledge that if he hits a golf shot to these products in his backyard, they will in fact carry over onto the golf course and improve his game. If he improves in his backyard, he'll improve in the golf course. If he gets worse in his backyard, he'll get worse in the golf course. I'm just saying, let's do it realistically. And we came to an agreement, and the agreement started with a 2-year developmental period where in the first 6 months, of course, I was already going around the country with my golf career, my schedule. And I measured how balls bounced on greens and how they rolled on greens, how fast they were, how high the first bounce was. If it had backspin, what happened after the first bounce? Did it bite and back up? Did it just stop? Did it roll forward with less backspin? I measured real balls on real greens. I measured Bermuda greens and bent grass greens. And so I formulated the best average that I could get, because bent is a little bit different than Bermuda grass. But I took those two because they're all over the U.S. I didn't take Korai or something from Japan. I did it in the U.S., and I got this profile of incoming shots from different distances with different lofts, different trajectories, and different spin rates. And I then went to the research department at Sinlon and said, there was a step in between there. I got real grass. Then I went to my office, which is in Spicewood, Texas. And we have 6.5 acres there that our building is on. And we built a pretty nice 80-yard wedge range where from 80, 60, 40, 20, and green side, we could hit all the shots of the short game. Mm. into this area. And the area was big enough that I could put 6 different products of turf. If I was good enough with the wedge, which I practiced and I am good enough, I could hit them from whatever distance I wanted to. And we measured how high the balls bounced, what they did after the first bounce, how far they rolled out and how quickly they stopped. Every parameter that we'd measured on real grass, we measured on the Sinlon products. And then we started remaking Sinlon products, and they would send different carpets to me. I would install them on my little test center, and I would test them. And we finally got to the point where we said, okay, we're ready. You are ready to go to market, and I am willing to say that this is very realistic. It's the best I've ever seen. It's the average. It's exactly the average between bent and Bermuda grass reactions on real greens. And just like real greens, if it's moist and humid and light rain, the greens are slower. If it's really dry and windy, the greens get a little faster. And in any case, as they get faster, they don't stop as quickly. The balls don't, chip shots don't stop as quickly, and the pitch shots. And if it's a little more moist, they do. And they're guaranteed for, I think it's 12 to 15 years. Mm. And anyway, so we went to market, and my son got so excited that he started a little company. He installed the greens in my backyard, and I actually have 8 real contoured greens that I hit into. And then I have 3 putting pads plus a deck that are completely flat, except they're tilted at different slopes. You know, they're not level. They're flat, but there's no contour on them except the main slope of the green. And I sloped one at 1%, one at 2%, one at 3%, one at 4%. And I found, of course, that at 5% at 11 green speed, which my greens are, wow, the ball won't stop.
Wow. 11?
And that's, yeah, 11. In all of the greens that I have, the slowest one is 9, And the fastest one is 11 to 11.5, unless I want it faster. I can do a couple of things to make it a little faster, but I don't want that. I don't. Most golf courses around the country are between the really good clubs with good greens are between, I'd say, 8.5, maybe 9, and 10.5 or 11. The pro tour plays on like 11.5 to 12, and they up their green speeds a little bit for the tournaments. And the majors, depending on what course it is, Shinnecock Hills coming up here, for example, probably will be around 12 because they have so much slope they can't make them any faster. At Bethpage Black, which are very, very low slope greens, they got up to 14.5 to 15 on the green speed.
Do you have any sense of what the average amateur golfer who plays, you know, on the weekends at his favorite local course, not a country club member, what average green speeds would be in courses like that? Just as a
comparison? Yeah, I think they're around 9. Okay. I think they're around 9. What I have measured, there are some at 8, and there are some that really don't cut their greens often enough. Don't cut them every day, that keep them at 7. Hmm. But back in the mid-50s, 1950, 1940 to 1950, the average green speed in the United States was 7. And then it went up to 7.5 and then 8 and then 8.5 and 9. And now there are enough at 10.5 and 11 that the average green speed is a little above 9. It's creeping up towards 10. But that's pretty fast. People putt better at 9 than they putt at 7. And they putt, this is a 9-foot green speed. In other words, if you drop the ball or roll the ball smoothly off a ramp that is exactly, you know, the right distance above the surface, and that's control that was set by the USGA years ago, we roll the ball down off a ramp onto the green, it'll roll 9 feet on a 9-foot speed green. Green speed is the distance the ball rolls on a level surface, no slope, given this initial energy that the USGA set. And I've found that golfers don't putt as well at 7 as they do at 9, and they don't putt nearly as well at 10 and 11 as they do at 9. 9 is the sweet spot. That's where I recommend to superintendents that call me and talk to me about this. I say, set them at 9, your members will be happy. Unless you're a course like some that want the higher green speeds, they want it to play more like tournaments, and then they go up to 10, 11. And it's kind of a sense of a pride thing that a lot of country clubs want their greens to be faster, so they're more like pro greens. And they do look better. The faster and smoother they are, the more beautiful the greens become to the naked eye. And so that's why there's a variety around the country. I would say the average is probably above 9 now, but close to 9. And the really, really fast greens are 12.
Well, as I said, they just finished the project yesterday, and I'm hoping there's some settling that goes on into the green. But if I wanted to increase the speed, because I put a lot of undulation all over the place, I have 5 holes. If I wanted to, how could I increase the speed on my Sinlon putting green? Can I?
Well, there's a special sand. It's not really sand. It's artificial. It's I'm blanking on the name of it, but it's complete. Instead of being sand like it's in a bunker, you know, or sand on a beach,
right,
where the shapes of the granules of sand are all kinds of shapes. I mean, some of them are sharp, some of them are rounded, some of them are oblong ovals. The special material that we put on the surface of a Sinlon green, if you want it a little bit faster, you got to be careful, though, because when you make it faster, you can't get them back out. You have to vacuum the things out. They're little, perfectly round, spherical balls that go down in the grass. And you can't put too much on because, see, I don't have any sand on any of the greens in my backyard.
Wow.
I just bought them so that they were different speeds, and I got my highest speed 11, 11.5, 12 on a really dry day. And I don't want them any faster than that, and I don't want sand in my house because I walk out in my bare feet all the time. I mean, I'm sitting in my office right now talking to you, and I can see all. Of course, I've got this beautiful office that has it's an octagon, where it has a big bay window out every flat in the eight areas. And they all look at me. I've got one on each green. And I've got a chair sitting in the, you know what a Lazy Boy chair is?
Of course.
If you put up a Lazy Boy chair and mount it up on a pedestal that rotates, that's where I'm sitting, and I can just turn it as I'm sitting here talking to you and look at each green, or I can change my view, and it's really a fun place to do work in the golf industry. Now, you have to understand I'm a golf nut, so I just love it. I get up and come in here in the morning, and I can't believe I've got about 10 steps to go out the door and hit a shot if I want to, or roll a putt, or practice my bunker game, or my distance control, or anything within 120 yards I've got emanating right out from my house. 8 target greens. I've got all these different putting pads that are different slopes. I've got a wedge calibration range where I can tell to the yard how far I hit every wedge shot. And then behind all this, down a hill, I've got my full swing range. It's 400 yards long, and I've got a 30-yard fairway in it, and of course I've got rough off to both sides, and so I can do anything I want to in the game of golf right in my backyard. It's just paradise for me.
And we'll be right back. Clearly you have one of the most awesome yards on the face of the planet, and you keep talking about being a golf nut. Well, listen, Dave, we're all golf nuts here. We're all, you know, and you've been lucky enough to figure out how to make a living doing it. But when they finished yesterday, my wife and I were standing out there, and the only reason I was able to do this is because she likes to putt, and she bought into it. And she thought, this will be fun, right? And so
great.
I know. I couldn't be happier. And we were out there last night, and she goes, your life just changed forever, didn't it? I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, you're not going to leave the house anymore. I said,
it has affected my life in so many ways. It's unbelievable because I don't really leave it as often as I used to. I mean, I do a lot of video shoots in the game. I'm brand ambassador for Cleveland, Srixon, Zexio Golf. And instead of going around the country doing video shoots for them, now they come here. They'd rather do it in my backyard because I've got every shot you want here. I can do uphill, downhill, side hill. Now, I never dreamed of that it was going to save me days and days and days of travel time every month. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing difference. And I also have a term that I've learned that I never knew before, because I've lived on golf courses most of my life just because I'm such a golfer. But now I don't live on a golf course. I live on golf. I step out from my office 10 steps. I'm on a beautiful fairway grass. I've got a tight lie, I've got a normal plush fairway, and I've got a light rough lie right outside the door. I can hit wedges from any place I want to any place I want to. Nobody is running a mower in the early morning to make me wake up when I don't want to. Mm. They're not watering. We don't have droughts because it's all this incredible nylon outdoor artificial turf, and it's impervious. You know, my backyard is I'm in my eighth year. And if you come out and look at it, people think it's brand new.
Sure.
Because nothing sticks to nylon. I mean, bird dew doesn't stick to nylon. It just washes away.
Thank goodness.
If you put paint out here, it wouldn't stick to nylon. The only thing I do for maintenance is I blow the leaves off the greens. Like on a normal golf course, if you have trees, and I love trees. And so I kept a lot of live oak trees on my lot. I didn't cut a single one. I cut all the cedar off, but I didn't cut any of it. I didn't cut a single live oak. And my fairways wind down the alleys between the oaks. And it's just so fun and so beautiful that I'm in awe of the game of golf in the early mornings and the late afternoons. You know, the shadows get long. It's almost like a religious experience to me.
You know, sometimes they call basketball players gym rats. Guys who just love to practice. I don't know what the equivalent term is for golfers, but it sounds like you just love to practice. Do you play very much?
Oh, I love to play.
Good.
In fact, what has happened is the whole game has changed for me because I practice during the week. I work a lot. I spend a lot of time doing research and testing, and I've worked hard my whole life. You know, I started out thinking couldn't make it on the PGA Tour. I went to college on a golf scholarship. I thought I was going to be a golfer, but then I wasn't good enough.
Right.
I wasn't a bad player. I got a four-year scholarship, but I couldn't make it on the tour. So I started doing space research. I got a great job at Goddard Space Flight Center, and I learned, even though I had majored in physics, and you spend a lot of time in the physics and the chemistry labs, you don't know real-world research projects. And I went to Goddard Space Flight Center, worked there for 14 and a half years, and learned how to do honest-to-God research. And during this time, I thought, I would rather play golf, even though I love to do research and space research especially, but I'd rather play golf than even do space research. So if I'm going to do, number one, what I love to do, I got to be a golfer who loves physics rather than a physicist who loves golf. And I changed my career and lost, of course, everything I had for 3.5-4 years. But I loved it. I had a heck of a time. I enjoyed being in golf. And I'm not a very good businessman, so until I met my wife, I didn't make any money. But now she got me on the road, and I started, and I've got everything pretty much put into my backyard. That's why I call myself a nut, because I probably shouldn't have put in all the fairways. I mean, I love the greens, but I could have put in little hitting pads to hit my shots from instead of all these fairways, except that now I'm glad I did put in the fairways and the roughs and the fringes around the greens and the greens, all these different greens. I've got 8 of my favorite greens in the world that I look at every day here. Mm. And people they want to come here to see me. I have all my business meetings here because, the Wall Street Journal did an article when I first built this, and they heard about it, and they came to see it, took pictures, and said, it's the greatest backyard in the world. And that was their name, not mine. But I believe it has changed my life in so many ways. I practice. I work hard Monday through Friday. Weekends, I play golf. I don't practice at all. I just warm up and stretch my back when I get to the course, and then I go play. And I don't feel guilty about not practicing on the range there, not spending time in the evenings away from my family, going out to the range to practice. I got rid of all the guilt. I practice way more now than I used to, and I'm a better player now than I've ever been. So, I mean, it's a neat deal. Practice during the week, play on the weekends. What more can you ask?
Guilt-free golf. Wow, what a concept.
That's it. I live on golf instead of a golf course. I live on golf.
Yeah.
I drive to the golf course about a half an hour away, and it's a beautiful course. I've got a membership at Escondido Golf Golf and Spa. And
isn't that San Diego?
It's in Horseshoe Bay, Texas. No, it's Horseshoe Bay, Texas.
Oh, in Texas. Okay.
Yeah, just outside. I live about 20, 25 miles outside of Austin, and I drive. I live around a number of courses, so Austin's got some great golf. In fact, last week, the tour was here playing Austin Country Club, and one of the players stayed with me. I've got a little casita out back, and he was out here every morning and every afternoon before and after his matches, and we just have a heck of a time hitting shots, competing, play little games, work on your putting. There's just nothing better. You're going to find out. You're going to love it out behind your house. Practice during the week, play on the weekends.
Ugh.
Guilt-free golf.
Oh. Well, I live next to a private course that I'm not a member of, but, you know, and you talked about your trees, and someone recently asked me what kind of trees I have in my yard, and I said, well, I've got a lemon tree, and I've got a pear tree, I've got a cherry tree, and I have a golf ball tree. And they're like, what is that? I said, I don't know, but all year long, balls fall out of these trees into my yard. But so I'm a lucky guy. I haven't paid for a golf ball since I moved into this house.
That's pretty good. Pretty good.
So I'm curious now, when someone is wanting to do a practice area in their backyard and put in something like a sin lawn, or choose to do sin lawn because they are a golfer and they want the best thing for it, they may pay a couple extra dollars, but it's going to be worth it. It's going to be beyond pretty. It's going to be really useful and functional and helpful. What are the red flags that would be we should be looking at when we're doing our research with putting areas, practice putting areas for the backyard?
Well, I mean, you don't have to do any research at all if you'll just believe me. These are the best because I have done a lot of research, and Sin Lawn made a big effort to make a golf product. See, most companies, most outdoor carpet companies, they make their product and they say, here, buy this. This is what we make. Here, use it. And I went to Sin Lawn and said, wait a minute, that's not good enough. I want this and this and this. And, of course, I just told you the story of how we developed the product that really is better. I mean, you want it to roll. You don't want a ball to skitter back and forth in little lanes like it's on a grid of some kind when you're putting. You want the putting surface to be smooth. So my putting pads, I have them on. I laid cement slabs that will never change their slope or their smoothness. And my balls roll as well as the best bent greens. Now, I'm telling you, I've been to Shinnecock, I've been to Augusta, I've been to most of them just because I make a living teaching players, and they play tournaments on all these great courses. And I go and I walk with them, and I, you know, we work on them. But my backyard greens roll as good as any of them. And now they hold shots. See, we got a patent while we were working with Sin Lawn, and they are the only people in the industry that can use this patented underlayment that when a ball hits it, it takes the energy out. My greens are not filled with sand. Some less expensive carpets will put a green in your backyard, then they fill them with sand and rubber, and they're great for rolling, but they stop so quick. It's like hitting a shot into a bunker. It just stops. And that's not realistic practice. And, of course, once it rains and the wind blows, you've got to go re-rake the sand in and replace all that. I don't have any of that on my greens. All of our energy-absorbing material is below the green. And it's not foam rubber or anything like that because rubber gives the energy back. It takes it and gives it back, and the balls bounce too high. Hmm. What Simon has developed here, and I have in my backyard, are greens that they call shot stopper. And they stop like real balls. If the shot does not have backspin, it hits, bounces, and goes on, just like on a golf course. If it has backspin, it hits, bounces once, and then checks. And in some areas of my greens, I can back up shots just like on real grass, just like the pros do on real grass. And it's just a great fun experience to go out and play games. And I'm in my eighth year, and I'm looking right now. Let me see. I've got 12 shots. I played one game. I play my games in 12 shots at a time, and I have scores, so I know if I'm playing good, if I'm playing bad, if I'm up near the record. I've got one pro that's got three records here. I've got another pro that's got two records on two different games, and my 12 shots. I just went out this morning and hit 12 balls. And didn't set a record, but it was pretty good. I was really very pleased this morning. What I'm doing, I'm trying to get in shape because I had prostate cancer a few years ago, and I'm not as strong as I was. And I'm working out now. And of course, right after I work out, shoot, I can't hit a wedge shot at all. I mean, with any control. And so I went out this morning. I worked out. And then I went outside and I'm looking at these 12 shots, and they're not bad. They're not the best I've ever done, but they're good for me for after workout scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I stretch and see, I would never work out a heavy with weights and things to really try to strengthen my muscles in the morning on a Saturday or Sunday morning before I went out to play. I don't do that. I work out during the week, and then I stretch, and then I go out and I use my golf muscles. And so I try to tone them for golf while I'm going through this strengthening process. And I've come to, almost all the players, there's one player that I work with that doesn't work out much, but everybody else does. It's in the Tiger era of golf, most players believe, and I believe, there's nothing that a fat, flabby muscle can do better than a well-toned strong muscle, but it's got to be toned for golf. You can't play basketball 6 hours a day and then go be a great golfer. You can't lift weights 6 hours a day and be a great golfer. You got to practice and play golf 6 hours a day. You can do the other things. You can play basketball. You can lift weights. But you have to tone your muscles after they're strong for golf. I mean, putting and chipping and pitching, you got to be in a good rhythm with good touch. You have to be toned for golf. And that's why having it right outside your back door is unbelievably more convenient than getting in your car, driving, even if you only have to drive three blocks to the clubhouse. You have to get your clubs. You have to get range balls. You have to talk to the pro. You have to talk to whoever's monitoring the practice range. You have to talk to other people. I go out in my backyard. I can just practice. I don't waste 15 seconds with any of that other stuff. I just practice golf when I'm outside in my backyard.
Well, I'm just excited. I've got a big family dinner coming up real soon, and we've got 25, 30 people coming for dinner, and there's a lot of little kids and stuff. So I went out and I found some used left-handed kids putters, right-handed kids putters, a left-handed putter. So I have a bunch of putters here. I got all the golf balls that I need that keep flying into my yard. And I'm just looking at this as part of our entertainment in our backyard, to have something to do that everybody can do together.
Well, the neat thing, since you have a Cinelon installation, is that not only do you have entertainment, fun. I mean, the reason we play golf is that it's fun.
Right.
But it's also fun to score lower as you age and get better. That's what's really fun. And, I mean, that's the maximum fun. And it helps your game. I mean, that's the breakthrough that Cinelon has made.
Right.
It's moved golf in the backyard into realistic golf in the backyard. So my chipping and my pitching, when I get to the golf course, I'm right on. It's really a different thing than the previous artificial turf entries in the market for the last number of years.
And one of the things that I'm planning...
I just feel so lucky.
Oh, yeah. So do I. I'm really lucky. one of the things that I'm planning on doing is... Now I have, because I do video as well, and we have Golf Smarter TV, so I have a lot of video tips on there and, you know, vacation spots and tech review and equipment review, things like that. But now I'm very excited about having teachers come out here and shooting videos of putting tips and putting drills and chipping, you know, moments. But this has now become a studio for me to produce more video of some really valuable, helpful content.
You know, that's exactly the way I feel, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't in my original plan. I originally did this so I could develop new and better teaching techniques for my schools. But it has turned out to be a wonderland for saving me time and travel because everybody wants to come here. I joke when the TV crew arrived, I said, look, I just cut the grass this morning. It's perfect height. I just watered the whole thing. It's perfectly healthy. And of course, they walk out and it's a beautiful green wonderland of golf. And I haven't touched it. I haven't had to do anything. I could hold the World Putting Championship here tomorrow and the pitching and chipping. And of course, my range isn't bad. I can't say it's really, really the fairway grass. See, I don't water my range, and the fairway grass I did not put in Cinelon. I put little Cinelon strips in so I can tell how far I'm hitting it. So there are little strips out there, but the Cinelon grass is much greener than the natural grass in Texas. It tends to be pretty light green or early tan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
You know, it's not as healthy.
Right.
So I don't have perfect fairways, but I can test my driving, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'm wondering if I should be putting up a net and just hitting balls into it. I'm not sure I'm going to do that because I really want to focus on my short game stuff. So I have set up the green itself. I've got five holes. It's about 30 feet long and about 15 feet wide with some, you know, undulation in there. But then I had them put some rough around it. I had one corner. I had the rough with an incline to it. But then I've got a fringe area that's about, I don't know, about 10 feet long, 5 feet wide, so I can chip from there onto the green. But my yard is long, so I also have it set up where I've got a mat and which I've been doing all along in the area that I now have the putting green. I had a little net sitting there. But I have a 10-yard, a 20-yard, and then the green is now at 25 yards that I can practice my chipping.
Oh, that's perfect. That is perfect. You know that the most frequent miss, I'll just give you this, is 14 yards.
Oh.
What you want to do is, on the average of the world, of both amateur and pro, it's funny, because pros miss greens with everything, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 irons, sometimes 7s, but starting with about 8 irons and 9 irons and wedges, they hit the green every time. Well, amateurs never hit greens with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 irons. I mean, they're always all over the place. And then the pros have these shots to the pin that need to carry. On average, the most frequent shot is a 14-yard carry.
Wow.
So I practice my 10s, my 5s, my 10s, my 15s, and my 20-yard pitch shots. That's what I practice more than anything else because I'm trying to be very disciplined. Those are the shots that if you miss, I mean, even the pros miss 5 greens a round on average.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got those 5 shots. Then you've got 3 or 4 par 5s where you're going to have a pitch shot. You've got about 10 shots every round. If you can one putt after 8 or 9 of those, hey, you're going to have a good score that day.
You bet.
Those are the greens that you miss. Greens that you pros miss with 6 irons and 5 irons and 4 irons, they only miss them 10 yards, 5 yards, 20 yards. I mean, that's where the scoring game is. You've got to get that next shot close enough because it's more important how long your first putt is than how good your stroke is. I mean, I can tell you this. Everybody's deadly from 1 foot. And if you can knock all your chip and pitch shots to 1 foot, you're not going to two-putt any greens. You're going to save a stroke every time you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to turn 3 shots into 2, and that's what you've got a backyard that can not only help your putting, it can help your pitching and your chipping and your short game. And that's a godsend. I mean, when I realized how much I enjoyed this and how good it was for my game, it did truly change my life.
Mm. Well, I don't plan on using this as a driving range. I don't want to, you know, I really don't want to set up a net and hit balls into a net. But, you know, on Mondays, the golf course next to me is closed, and I'm admitting this publicly here, and they're doing maintenance on it. But at the end of the day, when they lock the gates, you know, I have a gate that goes because the previous owner had a golf cart, so they have a gate that goes right onto the course. So on late Monday afternoons at this time of year when it's late, I can hit a couple balls out onto their course, and I walk out there, I pick them up, and I bring them back into my yard. My attitude is, hey, you guys hit balls into my yard, I'm going to hit some balls back into your yard.
That's a beautiful thought. No harm, no foul.
No.
Absolutely fine. I've done it myself. So we're both admitting it in public.
Listen, and I'm not going onto the greens. I'm not taking divots. I'm not, you know. Well, also, they're a client of mine. I produce video for them. But I still respect the fact that I'm not a member, but that I do live right next to it. So last year when you were on the show, we kind of wrapped up by me asking you, and I'm going to ask again. I bet you I know what you're going to say. So you want to make any predictions for the Masters?
In the Masters, I will take Phil, my first choice. My second choice will be Patrick Reed. My third is Dark Horse Brendan Steele, and my fourth is John Rahm, and that's my foursome.
Wow. That's a lot more than you gave me last year. All you said last year was, don't count Phil out. And I think you're saying the same thing this year.
Except I mean it more this year. I'm closer to accurate because he just won in Mexico for the first time in 5 or 6 years. He is essentially pain-free from his psoriatic arthritis that he's been fighting for years.
That's great.
And he's feeling good. He played good matches here in Austin. I think he's going to play in Houston. I think he'll play well. And I'm pretty sure he's going to play well in Augusta because he's hitting it. He's driving it maybe better than he has in years. His coach, Andrew Getson, has him really hitting it. He's driving it probably, I'd say, in the top 30% of the tour, which is very unusual for him. And his short game, of course, is always great, and his putting is I think, the best it's ever been. So I think he's a real threat this year.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, there seems to be a new buzz in the world of golf these days that everyone wants to talk about, and you have not mentioned him, so I'll drop it and see how you respond. But everyone's talking about Tiger.
Oh, I'm excited about Tiger. I mean, I love the fact that he has just put his nose down and said, look, I'm going to do this. I'm going to come back in spite of my back. Let me tell you something about these two guys. These are two special, special people,
absolutely.
Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, because I know of two people, and I won't name them because it really hurt them, that got psoriatic arthritis and never hit another golf shot. PGA Tour players that I'm familiar with, that I know them personally, they got it. It's really a difficult disease to get. It attacks your joints. It's inflammation. It's really, really tough. And they never hit another golf shot. Now, Phil, it really affected his career. He got it, and it's a disease that is difficult. There's no recovery from it. There are some medications that decrease the pain, but they're hard to play with. And he has gone through, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now of dealing with that medication. And as he's eaten better, improved his body, done everything he could to fight it, he's gotten better and better and better. And when he was here last week in Austin playing in the tournament, he was the best I've seen him in 6 years in terms of health. He's fought back from psoriatic arthritis, and he just won a PGA Tour event, not only, but it was a World Golf Championship event in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Now, here's Tiger Woods, who's gone through I don't know how many surgeries, but his knees and his back have killed him. And he's fused his back. And I know of, maybe 10 guys that have had that same surgery, including Lee Trevino very publicly acknowledged it. And Jerry Hurd acknowledged it. And neither one of them ever got back to top form. And I know two or three that didn't play again because it was so bad. And here's Tiger. He's contending 3 weeks in a row, not winning yet, but I give him incredibly high marks for changing his golf swing and sticking with it enough to at least get into contention in the PGA Tour event. Now, I don't really think he's going to win the Masters this year, but look out next year, because this swing that he's got now is a good swing, and it's going to get better, and it's going to feel more natural under pressure. And here are two of the greats of all time, and they're coming back. Look out for these. Hey, young guys, look out. Phil and Tiger are back.
So you see more majors in Tiger's future, huh?
I do. I see one or two, and I see one or two in Phil's future.
Awesome.
So I'm telling these young guns, look, I'm not knocking John Rahm or Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth, but I'm saying it's not over for Phil and Tiger yet.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great prediction. I'm so much happier with this prediction than the one you did last year. That is great. Well, Dave, there is so much more that I want to talk about as far as my having my own putting green and improving myself and games and drills and tips. Can we continue this conversation next week?
Listen, you know, I just changed this morning. I'm no longer a golf nut. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Of course we can continue this. I love talking with you about golf in our backyards, and helping players improve. That's what I live for, and I'll be with you. Just give me a call.
You actually scared the crap out of me there. Well, what I never anticipated in this conversation was that Dave would have the time to talk to me for more than an hour. So next week, we'll continue the interview with Phil Mickelson's coach and learn how to get some of that Mickelson magic for our short game. But what I really wanted to talk about now that I have a putting green in my backyard, was drills and games and tips. I need this information to practice every day to make me better at the short game. So next time, we're going to focus on putting, putting, and more putting. This week on our Golf Smarter Academy, Dustin from Ohio called in at 415-761-1498 with a pretty long question that covered a range of topics. I'm sure you didn't want to hear all the questions that he had because there was only one that was directed at Tony and about his game. I needed to answer him, so I called him back. I just wanted to let you know, if you have a question for me, I'd love that. I may answer it on the show, or like Dustin, I'll either call you back or I'll write you back, but you will get an answer. So, let's get back to Dustin and see what kind of issues he has on his game, and once an answer from our professor, Tony Manzoni.
Hey Fred, this is Dustin Derrick. I'm from Ohio. Love the show, and I had a couple things to talk about. Number one, I like the single pivot swing episode and wanted to maybe hear a little more, see a little more, and maybe dig a little deeper into it. You know, my question, I guess, about improvement is I've been using kind of golf tech to hone my swing, change my grip from a baseball grip to a proper golf grip, change my swing plane from over the top to pretty consistent, either on plane or a little in to out, and I'm getting a lot better contact, but there seems to be a couple things that, you know, I just quite can't shake, and that is my head moving back and then starting forward. Also, the length of my backswing. Even when I tell myself that I need to shorten my backswing because it's long, I essentially have to force myself with a noodle or something to be able to do that. But then a couple swings without the noodle later, back to the old length of the backswing. So that seems to be just one thing that is, I am having trouble kicking, and I'm seeing it. I wanted to see if there was any good advice for trying to shorten the backswing and still stay in proper position. Once again, love the podcast and keep up the good work.
Hey, Dustin, I heard your question, and it's twofold. First of all, in moving the head in the golf swing back and through, you've got to learn to center yourself to the ball, number one, and then you're going to swing around your spine. So you're going to be turning on the backswing and then turning on the through swing. I like to have my players or my students set up a little bit, brace a little bit towards the left, a little 60-40, and stay in that. What's happening is you're swaying as you turn, and then you have to sway back to get to the ball. So try working on staying centered and making sure that the first move on the backswing, your right shoulder and right hip are turning behind you towards the target, and that'll hold you in place. As for the length of your backswing, all my students eventually come up to me and say, I'm taking them back too far. How can I stop? So I watch them. And there's only one way to do it, really, is to think to yourself or to fake yourself out a little bit and say, I'm going to take a half swing. And because your field is off. If I told you, well, you got to take it just to here, you wouldn't be able to do it. You'd go right back to the full swing. So have somebody watch you and start with a half swing. Hit the ball as hard as you can, like you always do. But in your mind, you're only taking it half. And I'm sure that the person watching you will tell you you took it almost full that time. That's the only way you can do this because your feel was off. I know you can work back into it, but start with a half, what you perceive as a half swing, and it'll probably be three-quarter swing. All we want to do is we want, when the shoulders stop, we want the arms to stop. And most people, they turn their shoulders and then they keep moving their arms down and get way past parallel, kind of like some of the old-time players. And you don't want to do that. It's too hard to play from that position. Good luck.
And that, my friend, is our Golf Smarter Academy, featuring your question and an answer from our professor, Tony Manzoni. If you'd like some free expert advice on an issue you're having with your swing, your game, or your equipment, call our toll-free Academy line at 415-761-1498. Again, that's 415-761-1498. When your question gets answered on the show, you'll receive a copy of Tony's DVD, The Lost Fundamental, a Golf Smarter Academy diploma, and one of our brand new Golf Smarter ball markers. For more on our academy, both the clinic and participating in the podcast, go to golfsmarter.com/academy. Have you followed me on either Twitter or Instagram yet? Well, let's do this together. Follow me, Fred Green, and it's G-R-E-E-N-E, Fred Green, at Golf Smarter, and I'll follow you too. That's at Golf Smarter on Instagram or Twitter and Facebook, and use hashtag Golf Smarter to get everyone involved in our conversation. Academy questions, comments, guest suggestions, again, call 415-761-1498 or click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.